needle, little go, go, go. Yeah, at least.
Pick a song to name a podcast after, and it's gonna be from the Pearl Jam catalog. I don't know if you're gonna go with this one every time.
Yeah, Evil Little Goat is a little obscure.
It's a bit obscure,
but it's fun.
Go ahead and get this out of your head.
Wait till the band starts baaing.
I'm Jeremy, and that guy over there is Travis, and this is, for lack of a better title for now, the Evil Little Goats podcast. I guess we'll call it an unofficial Pearl Jam fan podcast.
Yeah, that works.
Does that work? All right.
Yeah.
When you and I first started kicking around the idea of doing this show, I don't even remember which one of us suggested this title. Maybe I just Googled. I'd never heard the song until a few weeks ago. This has been around forever.
Yeah, it was a demo or an outtake from 10. And I just wonder if some fan or somebody could do the work to find out who made the bah noises in the studio. Like, was that...
That's got Stone all over it. It's got Stone all over it.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, I was thinking it might have been like a weird little Jeff thing.
Yeah, I'm not in tight with the band like you are. I'm not BFFs with the guys way you are.
Me and the PJ crew, we're tight.
You guys hang.
Yeah,
it's what you do.
Yep.
So
for those of you who can't see what's happening right now, it's sarcasm, everybody. it's 100% sarcasm being laid on real thick.
So this is the very first episode. We'll see how it goes and how long we're around. But thanks a lot for giving it a chance and listening to us for a few minutes. I guess we should try and start with who we are and why we decided to do this and a little bit of the background of why we love this band that's been around for what feels like 40,000 years.
Yes, go. Your turn. Jeremy, get on it.
For me, I was first introduced to them by accident. My brother knew of the song Jeremy and told me about it, and I swear to this day that he told me Soundgarden was the artist behind the song Jeremy. I went and checked it out. I think he handed me a cassette that he'd recorded it onto, and I played the crap out of it because I loved it. And I started kind of exploring, and I really liked that Soundgarden, but they sure didn't sound too much like that Jeremy song. Figured out who it was. And there's just some sort of, emotional, magical thing that happened for me with this band that has just drawn me in. And as angry as I get with them from time to time, they can, in the end, do no wrong.
That's kind of my sentiment without the Jeremy. You know, like, Jeremy actually is one of my least favorite Pearl Jam songs.
Really? How dare you?
Yeah, I know. I'm offended your namesake. don't go into a classroom with a bunch of kids and break out a gun and shoot everybody.
I'm going to do it because I'm so filled with rage.
The kid shot himself in front of the teacher. Is that
right? I believe that's how
the video works.
Yeah.
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 I got into Pearl Jam early 90s. For location purposes, for those of you listening outside of the Seattle area, we're both based in Seattle, so so there's a strong local tie to Pearl Jam, and I don't know, it just growing up in high school, like music, the bands that I listened to, they were like my friends. I really connected to a lot that was going on in Seattle at the time and through high school, and I had pictures of the band on my wall, and I always just loved Pearl Jam, and yeah, I grew up listening to them, and there was a small period where I didn't pay attention, but that kind of happens when you hit your 20s and you pay attention to things other than music. And then now I work as a music blogger and journalist. I run a website called GorillaCandy.com.
You've heard of it.
Yes, shameless plug there. You're probably you might be listening to this podcast, very podcast, directly from a link off of that website. So. And I've been fortunate enough to report on Pearl Jam news and have some interaction with some band members. And it's just something that I found that my readers really like hearing about Pearl Jam. I know that there's a very strong fan community with Pearl Jam, and I figured it'd be good to talk about it. Kind of the good and bad of being a Pearl Jam fan, and what we like about the band, what we don't like, and why we like it, and yeah, things like that.
A couple things that you said there strike a chord with me. One is that weird friendship feeling that you have with the band. I've been a big fan of a lot of bands, but there is something weirdly more personal with this band. For some reason, I don't know them. I've talked to various members over the years, but there's this weird friendship connection. And watching the movie that just came out last year, PJ20, It was the weirdest thing because it was like watching a documentary about these friends that you spent all this time with over the last 20 years. And you knew kind of most of it, and there were little bits and pieces that maybe you didn't that kind of introduced you to it. But I can't say that I have that same connection with any other band that I probably love just as much. But there's just something about them. And I don't know if that's just common for us because we grew up around here and you know, we were here at that time or whatever. But that's a very, I think, unique thing to have with a band.
Yeah, and it definitely isn't just us. It's nationwide. It's worldwide. You know, it's very much the band has connected. They have obviously fans everywhere, except Seattle apparently, because they never play in Seattle.
Right. Ooh, we'll get to that.
Yeah, I took a dig there.
Yeah.
Anyway, but they definitely have that. And you and I have exchanged emails about this before, where it's just like, as much as we we're disappointed or we scratch our heads at some of the things the band does, and what we might like them to do. We still just can't be mad at them.
I can't stay mad at you.
It's like I've fallen in and out of love with dozens of bands, maybe hundreds, and when I, you know, just and I still love a lot of bands, but Pearl Jam has always been there. It's been the constant.
Yeah, there's something about even look. Let's face it, all of the records aren't gold. All of the songs aren't hits. But there's something about even listening to the ones that even I deem as the bad ones. That I have a weird emotional connection to, that I will listen to and I will sing along with because I know all the words. Can't tell you the title. I probably couldn't tell you the title of 90% of their songs, especially anything after 10. But there's just something that connects on a very like weird basic level that I can't explain.
Yeah, and that to kind of segue off of you mentioning kind of not knowing the titles of songs, or you know, I figure we should probably explain our level of fandom.
Yes.
You know, we are, as you can tell, we are fans. We are passionate about this band. You know, we love just about everything they do. But, you know, I'm not, I don't think of myself as a super fan, like an obsessive, you know where the band lives
fan. Come on, I see you camped out in the same spot across from Eddie's house.
Look, he's not supposed to know about that.
Oh, sorry.
Don't give it away. He's going to start looking now.
Sorry.
But, you know, like, I'm
weren't
not...
Weren't you the guy that crashed into his house a few years ago?
Yeah, and he ended up writing Lucan about me. Yeah. No, it's very much, like, I'm the kind of fan that I know a lot about the band. There's a lot I don't know about the band.
Mm-hmm.
As we continue to do these podcasts, I imagine there's going to be a lot of inaccurate information that share or
tons.
We speculate on. Where I don't consider myself an expert, but I do consider myself knowledgeable. So, like, I'm not the kind of fan that's going to be able to tell you, you know, the best version of a certain song was on this date at this venue.
Right.
You know, things like that. But I will be able to tell you that, you know, Yield came out in 1998. Yeah.
Really? That was 1998?
I think so. See, there's that possible inaccuracy.
See, and
there.
I think you are even, as a music blogger, and I think, honestly, a bigger fan than me, you are way more knowledgeable than I am, where I am just a fan. And I'm a fan, I'm curious if you're the same way, where almost to the ridicule, or brings about ridicule from people around me, because They're past their prime. You know, we're not hitting here in the middle of Fun's, you know, we're not doing the Fun podcast because the band Fun is so big right now. We're doing this because we love this band that's been around forever. They definitely peaked, I think, in the 90s. They've been very solid if you're a fan that has stuck with them all that time. So I'm not taking anything away from them as a band, but several people that I've told I'm going to start doing this podcast were like, really? Pearl Jam?
Why aren't you doing a Bush podcast?
Yeah, how come you're not doing... yeah, exactly.
Why aren't you doing the Stone Temple Pilots cast?
Oh, don't get me started on those guys.
Yeah, same here.
Don't get me started on those guys.
No, I completely agree with you. You know, it's we want to be as honest as possible about the band when we're doing this with our thoughts.
Yes.
On the band, at least. I'm sure Pearl Jam will probably tell you maybe they're better than they ever now. Who knows?
Oh, I'm sure.
When you release a new album, every album is better than the last album.
Yeah, oh, it's much better. Yeah. We really gelled as a band this time. We're having more fun than we've had in years. The same article that we've read for the last 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, when they're never going to make an album, probably. I think, like, No Code was probably their last, like, extremely excellent, like, masterpiece of an album. And they've released, like Yield and Binaural and Riot Act and even Avocado and Backspace are all really good albums.
Mm-hmm.
But none of them, in my opinion, reached the artistic pinnacle that No Code gets to.
Well, let's
and that was a 90s record.
I got to know then what do, because I don't think we've had this conversation. What is the best Pearl Jam album?
Is Dead Air a bad thing? Can people hear me thinking? I bet the answer changes.
It does.
I really do. I mean, you can't fuck with 10.
Right.
Seriously can't fuck with that album.
Right.
That's just like, if you take 10 off the shelf, then you still have Verses and Vitalogy. Which I prefer.
Vitalogy and No Code that was a tough time for me. That was a tough time because there's some good stuff on Vitalogy, but there's some stuff that still gets airplay that I'm just like,
Better Man.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
We could mention that one.
That's another one of my least favorite Pearl Jam songs.
Just a little
Pearl Jam
sick
songs.
Of that song. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and that's where, you know, we could get into a rant about radio forever. But like, why would they play that song to the amount that they do of the huge catalog of great stuff that Pearl Jam's done? Why so much better, man? That's maybe a topic for another show. But yeah, I got to agree, 10 definitely is the album. But what about the reissue?
The reissue is great.
Yeah.
You know, there were reports that Eddie specifically wasn't happy with the mix of the record, which
mm-hmm.
when they did the reissue, Brendan O'Brien came in and did a remix of the entire
record. Because he did the original, right?
No, he did not.
Who did the original?
I don't know.
Hmm.
This is where we get into the gray area of possibly not getting our facts right.
Sure.
But I'm 99% sure that Brendan O'Brien did not do the original, and that's why they had him come back in and do the remix. The reissue is great, and you definitely pick up subtle things that sound different compared to the 10 that, you know, you and I grew up listening to.
Yeah.
But what really, like, when you go back to your question, the best Pearl Jam record, It hovers between No Code and 10. It's very, like, I have a strong attachment to No Code as far as emotionally. Like, I just, it's a different kind of album out of all of Pearl Jam's records.
That, to me, I always think of No Code as that was the time when they were hanging out with Neil Young too much.
Yeah.
Because there's some huge Neil Young influence all over that record, which is a great, I'm a Neil Young fan. That's great. But that was the beginning of them really slowing down.
Well, and Neil Young told them, gave them the advice to do whatever the fuck they wanted to do on their own terms.
And at that point,
even, well, before then they were doing that, but that's when they really started to do whatever the fuck they wanted to
do. Yeah, and they had the freedom to do it by then. I mean, they had plenty of money and they could have never sold another record and probably been all right. So I think that played a role there. By the way, according to Wikipedia, if we're going to be all factual, Rick Parrisher was the producer in 1991.
All right, there we go.
So there you go. Thank you, Internet.
Yes, we should get a little bell in here every time we're right.
Oh,
I've
got
one. Ding a bell, and every time I'm wrong, we gotta get a buzzer effect or something. So.
So from there, I guess. So we've discussed. So 10 clearly the best. Where do you want to go from there?
Well, I'm really interested in something that I didn't tell you that I wanted to discover through this podcast experience. I'm really interested in learning about your experience with the band as far as, like, being a fan. And we've had plenty of conversations, and you and I met, or, you know, virtually through you were interviewing Sean Smith.
Yes.
Of Brad for another podcast that you do. Would you like to plug your other podcast?
Sure. Yeah. You can hear more of me being entirely inappropriate at thesiblingrivalry.com. It's not even really pop culture, but it's just a podcast I do with my brother and our friend Stacy, and we just kind of share really embarrassing, intimate details of our lives because it's kind of like therapy.
Yeah, and it gives me good ammunition to fire back at Jeremy every once in a while.
Exactly, exactly.
But I mean, I'm interested in learning more about your experience with the band and hearing other, like, having gone to Pearl Jam events and interacting with fans. Everybody has a different story about why they love Pearl Jam or like this one time I saw Stone do this and it was so great, or this song changed my life.
Okay, well,
you know, that's the kind, to me, that's the kind of band Pearl Jam is.
Yeah,
for a lot of people.
There, I used to kind of laugh, and if my brother listens to this, he's going to throw this back in my face. But I used to kind of laugh over the years watching concert footage of like Michael Jackson, when people are just weeping, just huge tears, sobbing from the crowd. And I remember thinking, come on, it's Michael Jackson. It's music. It's whatever. So one Pearl Jam concert.
Did you cry at a Pearl Jam concert?
I cried at a Pearl Jam
concert. I have cried at a Pearl Jam concert.
Oh my God. Thank God.
Oh my gosh. See?
Thank God.
See, this is great. We're getting off to a great start for this podcast.
Very, very. See, this is my wheelhouse here when we get far too revealing. So Key Arena, boy, I wish I could say which. I think that I want to say it might have been the show when they were on their own, when they ditched Ticketmaster, had done their own thing, and they had like three security guards for all of Key Arena. It was just a mess. It was a nightmare getting in. The line to pick up your tickets, you had to wait in line for like an hour and a half, even though you bought them 6 months in advance. It was just the most poorly organized show ever. And getting in, no security, just violence, people pulling knives. It was awful. It was one of the worst experiences I've ever had being in public with other people. But the band was great. They did a good job. And at one point, finally, toward the end of the show, they did a live, because why would you not do a live? And all I remember was Eddie seemed to just be, he just was feeling it. And at one point, reaches down, pulls somebody up on the stage, and just sing. He's in the chorus, and he's in the dude's face. He's down on his knees. The dude is sitting on the stage, and Eddie's in his face. And we get to the line in the chorus and just screams, "You're still alive," and just points at the dude's face. And I put myself in that guy's position for just a minute. And that guy threw his arms up in the air and just fell backwards onto the stage. I was just like, holy shit, to be that guy. What an amazing, like, if you're a fan on any level, to have that experience with any band, what an amazing experience. And just the tears, just, that was like one of the like true, I just lost it. It was in the moment, and it was just a beautiful experience because so much of the night had been such a chaotic nightmare.
That I got goosebumps hearing that story.
Well, there you go.
That's
how we do.
That's some serious stuff there. That's like, man, if I could be that guy,
I know.
I mean, I would. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, I mean, I've met members of the band. I've interviewed members of the band. I've run into them at other shows, like in public. I've stood next to Mike McCready while he was tuning his guitar at the Showbox. Like,
wow.
All kinds of just like things that somebody who lives in Cleveland or Kansas City or something might.
You're never
like, they're never going to get that.
Yeah.
And you know, I've had lots of really cool experiences. I've never had that.
It was a sight to see. The other thing that I'll always remember is I work in radio, and there was a show that I was producing just prior to the war with Iraq, and it was a very liberal progressive show, so we were trying to put together kind of a panel show of experts to talk about why we shouldn't go to war. And at the time, the band was super outspoken about, you know, anti-Bush, anti-war, and all that stuff. And I'd been trying to kind of form a relationship with the publicist to find a reason to one day get them on. And because they were so outspoken, I thought, this might be my chance. So I reached out and asked Eddie Vedder to come on and be a part of a panel with Congressman Jim McDermott, Seattle representative, congressman for life, and a local Muslim activist to talk about why war with Iraq was the wrong thing. And for some reason, he agreed to do it. And he came into the studio and spent an hour with us one night with this congressman, with this activist, with the host, and just kind of talked about just their opinions, just kind of kicking the whole thing around. And just to kind of put that together was a really cool thing. But to just be in the same room, I still hear, if I think about it, I can hear the buzzer at the door when it was, and the guy at the desk says, can I help you? And you just hear this.
Yeah, it's Eddie Vedder. I'm here to be on the radio.
It's like hearing that. And I was like, okay, I have to go get Eddie Vedder. I'm going to go get him, and I'm going to bring him in here. Just such a cool thing. And you know, talk to him a little bit off mic about all that stuff. and he'd recorded liners for us. And one of I can try and pull one of them up, but he said something like, "It's one of those, you know, you're listening to this station where they play the hits or whatever." But his was, "This is Eddie Vedder, and if Fox News is fair and balanced, then I'm big and tall." Which, of course, he's you
he's
know,
like
5 foot nothing.
5 foot two. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was very. He had a very good sense of humor about it. And toward the end of the night, he'd left about a half a cup of coffee behind that he didn't finish. And my wife was there taking pictures. And she has this weird thing about celebrity leftovers. So she drank Eddie Vedder's coffee.
That's kind of weird.
It is kind of weird.
Yeah. So you've, now to make it one degree closer, you've had Eddie Vedder saliva in your mouth.
In a
you've
weird
had Eddie,
way.
You've had Eddie Vedder DNA in your body.
In a
your
weird
person.
Way, yes.
Wow. That's,
does that make us relatives or lovers? I'm not sure.
It makes you almost one of the creepy fans that would sit outside his house and stalk
him. I didn't drive
him.
The car into his house, I promise. Jeez.
Yeah.
So I'm a fan. You know, the love for this band runs deep for me.
I mean, I knew that, of course,
yeah.
But it's good to get that gauge of, you know, to let our listeners know that, you know, they're talking with people who are fans, not necessarily experts, but passionate people.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, putting that show together was a 2-year effort. Like, I would just kind of check in with them every now and then, just feeling them out, getting to know that these are the handlers or whatever, the publicists or whatever. So, I mean, that took 2 years to get him to give us 1 hour, which is never, I mean, that was, what, 12 years ago now or whatever. It's never been duplicated, but that's the level to which I wanted to have that experience with that guy, to put him on the radio, to share his ideas, was like a 2-year effort.
And, you know, all of that for AM radio.
Exactly.
For AM radio. Nothing against AM radio.
AM radio at 10 o'clock at night in Seattle, by the way.
Yeah, where a lot of Eddie Vedder's demo is going to be listening.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that probably Ed wanted to share his opinions with a broad audience,
mm-hmm.
and an informed audience. And I think that a lot of people who listen to AM news radio are informed.
Especially at the time.
Or want to be informed, at least.
Especially at the time when, you know, when there was just so much confusion about the world and our place in it. So,
you know, I never get any. I don't get shit for liking Pearl Jam.
You don't.
It's really interesting. Like, I walk around in a Pearl Jam hat, Pearl Jam shirt,
as you have right.
Pearl Jam
you have
hoodie.
On right now, by the way.
Yeah, I'm wearing. For those of you who are merch geeks, I'm wearing the Sasquatch hat and the Seattle, the green and yellow Seattle tee.
These are brand new, right? This is new stuff.
The tee is brand new. The hat's been around for about a year.
Okay,
has been available.
But this is
for
all
a while.
Part of the whole like Sonics bring back the Sonics.
Right?
Thing.
Yeah. And it's very very cool gear. It's funny. Funny Pearl Jam story involving Jeff Ament. About 6 months ago, I interviewed Jeff, and I was pitched an interview with Jeff, and I never would say no to that. So I took the interview, had a great conversation, really good interview, and I'm sure maybe we'll play some excerpts at some point, mm-hmm. sometime down the road. And he was doing a signing. It was for, I don't know if the band is R&DM or Random.
I always call him Random.
Yeah, so it was for Random, and he was doing an in-store at Easy Street Records in Lower Queen Anne. And I went to the in-store and watched him play. And then as I waited in line to get my 7-inch sign, and I also had a band photo from 91, maybe it was 92. And the photo I got from my high school English teacher, Dana Knox. And so it was her first year teaching. And in 92 is when Pearl Jam started to break.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, one of her teachers, I believe, either her mom was friends with Mike McCready's mom, because I believe Mike McCready's mom's a school teacher. I don't know how much we want to share that kind of information with people. It's readily available, I suppose.
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking of psycho fans who might track this
don't
down.
Don't drive your car into Mike McCready's mom's house.
Yeah. So I'm sure she's probably a retired school teacher now. But anyway, Dana Knox's mom was friends with Mike McCready's mom. And if we wrote a fan letter to Pearl Jam, the band would give us back. Everybody would get a signed photo.
Okay.
So I got a signed photo for writing a fan letter. Of Dave A and Mike signed it, and I had that photo from 91, and I brought it, and I had Jeff sign it. Jeff didn't even look at it; he just signed it. It's like, oh, it's great promo photo,
right?
And then I told him who I was, and you know, hey, thanks for the interview, and he was like, oh, glad to meet you. And then I showed him my hat. It's like, hey, would you mind signing my hat? he looked at it, and him and Joseph Arthur were looking at this hat, and they're like, "This is a really cool hat, man. I've never seen this before." And it's just funny because he hasn't seen his own merch.
Right, that's crazy.
And you know, it has a big, it's a big green, and it's a green hat with a yellow PJ embroidered on the top and a yellow bill. And on top of the bill, there's a reflective sticker that says Pearl Jam on it and the size.
Right.
So he knows it's an official hat. And when he flips it upside down, the embroidery says Pearl Jam Rockin' Steady since, what does it say, like 1990 something? I don't know.
Right, yeah.
So he knew it was an official hat, and he wrote on it, you know, to Travis, cheers, rock on, Jeff A. or something. But it was really funny that Jeff had never seen his own hat before.
Yeah.
But yeah, I never really get, it's just known that I'm a Pearl Jam fan.
Right.
In circles, I might get teased a little bit, like, as far as like, oh, you're a big fan, and people tease me about being such a big fan, but they don't tease me because... They don't make fun of me because I like Pearl Jam. They make fun of me because of how much I like Pearl Jam.
Right, right. I could see that. And I guess I shouldn't say I get made fun of, but it was more in the context of us putting this show together that I've heard a lot of all of the bands. Like, why not do like a Seattle music podcast or whatever? And I figure without doing any research, there's probably already two dozen of those, of people playing the hits. There are streaming radio stations that are doing that, you know. And I'm not passionate about that. I enjoy, there's a lot going on here. There's some great stuff coming out. But as I'm sure we're going to find out very quickly, we could talk about this band for hours. There's just so much just personal experience, a lot of stuff coming out this year that's going to happen. You got reports of a new single in July, a new album that they're supposedly working on.
Possible tour.
They're going to play Wrigley Field. They're, you know, why are they not playing Safeco, by the way?
Well, I wrote an opinion piece on that on Gorilla Candy, and it just right when they announced Wrigley, I was like, well, it makes sense. Why not play Safeco? And
or any other Seattle venue, please.
Yeah, because really, and I hinted at it this when I interviewed Stone. I should have been more direct, but honestly, I don't know if you listened to the interviews that I gave you, Jeremy, but I mean. I try to be professional when I interview people, and I have notes, and I'm like, okay, they answered this question, let me go to the next question.
Well, and it's not like you're asking the president, why did you drop a bomb? You know, like you do need to have a certain level of respect, I think.
Yeah, and like when I interview, and it kind of depends on how the interview's going too. Like when I interviewed Jeff, it became a conversation, which made it really easy.
Yeah.
When I interviewed Stone, it became more business.
Yeah.
So I asked him, how difficult is it to play in Seattle? Instead of why aren't you playing in Seattle? Because I thought that would be a little,
it's a little more combative.
Combative, yeah. And then I asked, and then like the follow up was, well, you know, you play these big shows all across South America and Europe to 50,000 to 70,000 people. You know, I imagine that's what a big show in Seattle would be like for Pearl Jam. And what didn't come out of my mouth is at a place like Safeco Field,
right,
or Quest Field
would be incredible.
Where you could play you too could play Quest Field. Kenny Chesney could play Quest Field.
Yeah.
Not many artists could do it. Pearl Jam could pull off Quest Field.
Yeah. I saw U2 at the Kingdom. And
yeah.
Pearl Jam could have done the Kingdom if we still had a Kingdom. So, I mean, they certainly could do a Quest Field.
Yeah. So I didn't get a direct answer as to why not, but I have written about it and thrown out the question. And we'll have more time to discuss all of
this.
Well,
I'll tell you. The reason I think, and it's based on Eddie's words, the last time I saw them at Key Arena, they made some joke about, you know, thanking everybody for coming out to see them, all three or four people that actually paid to get in.
Yeah, and Stone made that comment when I asked, how difficult is it to play Seattle? And he says, well, the only thing difficult about it is managing the guest list.
Yeah.
Which you know, unfortunately brings us to the harsh reality of some of the things we dislike about the band, but we recognize and we respect, is they're a business.
They are a business, but I think at a certain point, and this is very easy to say when you're the guy that doesn't have all of the money, but it seems like you could do a couple of other dates on the tour to make up for what is essentially going to be the free hometown show.
Right.
You're letting everybody in, acknowledge it, and take the money from the rest of the people. But we're the ones that put them where they are. Seattle put them on the map.
And, you know, I 100% agree with that. But I also, just to put some perspective, the band's done a lot for Seattle.
Oh, that's true.
And
yes.
So that's why I don't get all high and mighty as, I'm in Seattle, damn it, you need to fucking play a show in Seattle or else. Like, they've raised, like, when they played two shows in 98 at the Memorial Stadium, They raised $500,000 for charity during those two shows.
And they do a ton of charity work.
Yeah, they do tons of charity work for local organizations. And so it's tough to get mad at them for saying, you know, we want to live our lives.
Right.
And we're just going to neglect you for a while. But come on, during the PGA 20 year, to not play in Seattle and then to slap us in the face by playing Vancouver, BC.
Right.
Playing, what is it, like 170 miles north of Seattle or something.
And that's the thing is, you know, it's really hard to reconcile. Boy, you know, I would have liked to go to a Pearl Jam show this summer, but at least the whales are getting fed. You know, like it's hard to be okay with that.
Yeah.
When you've supported them, when you've laid down tons of money on the merch and you've bought all the albums and you've gone to all the other shows when they've been here and, you know, they could play for you or they could save the whales.
Yeah.
Screw the whales. let's just be honest.
Play some Pearl Jam. Yeah. Do you want to play some Pearl Jam?
Let's play some Pearl Jam. And in fact, I mean, we've put in a solid 30 minutes or so.
Whoa.
Should we wrap things up with a little music? And
yeah, let's cap it off with do you want to play a 7-minute version of Y'all Ledbetter?
Do I?
I mean, it's I believe from Camden, New Jersey, May 26, 2006.
Now we'll have to talk about, maybe we can do this on the next show. We'll have to talk about live music versus studio music.
Yeah, oh, for sure. And this is it's not the best version of Y'all Ledbetter. I'm sure there are ones that are much better, but I just happened to have my external hard drive with all my Pearl Jam on it, and I was digging through songs and I grabbed this one of Y'all Ledbetter.
And I guess as it goes out, we should say thank you for listening. It's the Evil Little Goats podcast. Do we have a website where people are listening?
We can go to, you can go to GorillaCandy.com. And you can also go to GorillaCandy.tumblr.com. There's a link to the Gorilla Candy Tumblr from Gorilla Candy's website. And that's it.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for listening. We'll be back in a week or so. We'll see. Soon. Yeah. As soon as we can. Evil Little Goats podcast. Thanks a lot for listening. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Oh. We love you. Thank you. Good night. Goodbye. Matt Kevin. Stone Gossett. Jeff Ament. Mike McCready. Boom Gasman. Take a little credit. See you next time. Thanks so much.